Welcome to Christian Medical and Dental Association's chapel. We trust this message will encourage your walk with the Lord.
Today I want to talk a little bit out of Ephesians chapter 4, and the theme is called to more. It's coming out of some devotionals that I've gone through recently and how God's working in my heart, and so I stand before you today getting ready to teach you and share with you some thoughts and principles that I have to work on. So know that I know I have these weaknesses and challenges too, and that I'm asking God to work in my heart, and He's reminded me through this series of devotions that I've gone through of some areas in my life to work on. But called to more, what a time we're living in, right? The chaos abounds. You don't have to go far to find disruption going on. It seems like an age when people hate each other based on their tone. You turn on, no matter what news channel you turn on, right? It seems like everybody's angry at one another. We're a little bit polarized as well, right? We're put off in these opposite distances, but life goes on. And, you know, Paul understands what we're going through. He has gone through it. He's writing to the Christians at Ephesus from a prison cell in Rome, right? So what he experienced and what we're experiencing is very similar. And he, what he has to share with us is relevant for today. So in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 1, he starts out and says, "As a prisoner for the Lord, then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received." You know, notice here, Paul's writing to them, and he's writing to us today, and he didn't say, live a life worthy of your calling when it's easy, right? Because he's writing to us from a prison. Hey, live a life worthy of your calling during those quiet seasons, whenever there's not any disruptions in your life. That's when you're going to live worthy of your calling as a Christ follower. Moments when everybody agrees with each other, that's the time to live a life worthy of your calling. No, he says, just live the life worthy of your calling. As you look through this passage, we're going to learn that some of the principles that he goes on to teach us what it means to reflect Christ in our life and to live worthy in this calling that he's put on us as a Christ follower. I don't know about you, Rose and I love lighthouses. This is a picture I took of Cape Fear off the coast of North Carolina. We love the North Carolina coast, and having lived in Charlotte, we vacationed for probably 14 years up and down the coast, and all the lighthouses, and we love to visit them. And, you know, in their day, the lighthouse served a great purpose, did it not? It served this purpose that no matter if storms were blowing or hurricanes were coming in, waves might be crashing, it served as a point for anyone who was looking to keep them safe. It helped to give direction, if you would, to the person sailing the boat or keeping their crew safe. And no matter what storm came, the lighthouse kept shining, right? And that's how it is for us. Our calling is much the same way, is it not? Even though we go through life's challenges and storms and times of disruption, seasons of political unrest and everything that we're noticing in our country today, we're much called to be like that lighthouse, to be steady, to give direction to those around us, and to live worthy of our calling so that others may be drawn to Christ. So what does worthy of your calling look like? The first thing here is I want to just say it means guard your heart, right? Guard your heart. It's really easy to get consumed or sucked into the culture that we're living in today. It's really easy to become a part of something that we had no intention of becoming a part of. It seems like on social media, if you like one thing, right, you go in, you, oh, that sounds really great, and you like it. Before you know it, your feed is all full of similar things, and you end up in this echo chamber of just repeatedly hearing news or whatever it might be because you marked one thing. And so just guard your heart is, I think, one of the principles in being able to live worthy of our calling. Focus on small acts of faithfulness. Focus on small acts of faithfulness. Speak the truth, be gentle, show love, consistently serve where God has planted you. It's a good principle for us to live by. How do we live worthy of our calling? Is to focus on those small acts of faithfulness. And then trust God with the outcome. This sometimes is a hard part for me. I want to help guide the outcome. I want to be a part of that decision, God. Can I help give some influence on that? And I have to trust God for the outcome. And so that's a great principle for us to carry on. I like this image. I can't help but anytime I end up along a river or a pond or a lake with friends, we end up in this little competition about skipping a rock, right? And how many times yours can bounce and how far you get. Did you get all the way across the river or whatever? As I look at this, you see these ripples, and this is sort of like our influence, right? When we live worthy of our calling, we have no clue how far our influence is going to go, right? This is such a powerful image for us to think about how we live each and every day and how we go on. Paul goes on to give us some more instructions as you read into verse 2 there. He says, be completely humble. Be completely humble. Humility isn't celebrated very well in our culture today, is it? It's all about, you know, making the most of ourselves, influencing others to think the way we influence, why they should like us better. It's like our we're pushed to be first, to be the loudest, right? Because the loudest voice in the room seems to get attention, to be the most impressive. And so being humble is an area that Paul points out to this church. Keep in mind that humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. And I know you've heard that before, and I need to be reminded of that. It's so easy to get consumed in today's world that we think about my feelings or how it's going to impact me, how it's going to impact my family, and we don't think humbly. The image for this that I had is this river. You know, a river humbly yields its way down through the riverbed. Now, all of us who live in this region and other regions experienced, we saw what it meant when a river got out of control, when it didn't act, you know, in humility last year. But most of the time, rivers act in humility in the fact that it follows the plan of the river, and it just slightly bends and moves and weaves its way down through the countryside to where it needs to get. You know, today, even in the Christian world, we see people just smashing up against things, right? Like not acting in humility, just like a river out of control, like we noticed this last year with the hurricane. Jesus modeled perfectly for us this idea of humility. You know, he washed his disciples' feet, right? He healed quietly. He healed quietly. He didn't have to be in the center of attention to do what his Father had given him to do. He spoke truth with compassion. Great principles around humility. True humility is strength under control, not weakness under pressure. Strength under control, not weakness under pressure. So as we look at what does complete humility look like, the first thing is listen. Listen more than you speak. I heard someone say, God gave you two ears and one mouth. Be sure you use your two ears more than you use your one mouth. And so we need to be better listeners, I think, in the time in which we're living. It's an opportunity for us to give credit where credit is due to others, to encourage those around us, to be better listeners. Give credit before taking it. You know, whenever we're living out a life of humility, we're wanting to recognize those around us for how God's working in their life. And you know, whether you realize it or not, God's working in everybody's life. You can, if you think about it, find a way to encourage and inspire others around you. Even the person at the restaurant that checks you out, or you know, at the grocery store whenever you check out, there's a way to encourage those individuals and to speak into their life a word of kindness and to be thoughtful. So give credit before taking it to others. And then respond with calm, not anger. I added that one for me because it's very easy for me to, in my flesh, to get worked up. And before I know it, I'm responding out of my flesh and out of anger rather than responding out of compassion and love and allowing God to work through me. Remember that practicing humility isn't weakness, it's our calling. That's what God, you know, Paul says to live a life worthy of your calling. Then he goes on to tell us, here's what your calling looks like. It's living a life of humility. So remember that it is our calling to be humble. And then he goes on, the next part of this passage, he goes on, he says, be completely humble and gentle. And gentle. Driving home some really great thoughts for us here as we think about being gentle. That's not a strong word for me. You know, it's like, I'm not sure what to do with that sometimes. To act gentle whenever we need to take a time out sometimes. We need to take a deep breath. We need to think about what would it mean, what would it look like if I lived with this characteristic of being gentle. Gentleness, and the word that Paul used here for being gentle is power under control, right? Power under control. It doesn't mean that you just give your way into everything. It means that you do have the ability that God has given you to help direct, to give leadership, to guide your family, to guide your personal life, but that you're willing to take that power and keep it under control with God's help and to use it the way He would have us to. The image I have for this is a horse. I grew up on a farm. I didn't ride equestrian like this. I rode Western. But this was for Jamie, and I don't know if she, I know she's on her way on some donor visits today, so I'm not sure if she's seeing this, but she was a college athlete in equestrian. Some of you might not know that. But growing up on the farm and having horses and working around 4-H and Future Farmers of America, I saw a lot of horses do a lot of damage and hurt a lot of people because they're big beasts and they have a lot of power and they can accomplish a lot. That's why historically you saw horses being used to till the ground and to pull wagons and to do all kinds of things. They have a lot of power. But whenever the rider just uses that rein to gently give them some orders of what they want to do, that big beast of an animal is under control. He's yielded to his rider's command. And that's what being gentle looks like to me, is this horse who is a powerful beast being under control and being used for the right purpose, using his energy or her energy for the right purpose. So gentleness. Gentleness is strength fully surrendered to something greater. Gentleness is strength fully surrendered to something greater. When you live gently, you're not giving up anything. Guys, you're not giving up your manhood to live gentle, all right? Whenever you live gentle, you're giving up your strength for something much greater. Respect, appreciation, influence. There's a number of things that come out of living in a and just demonstrating gentleness. Gentleness does not mean you stop caring. It means that you stop controlling. It's choosing influence over intensity. I like that whenever I read that. Choosing influence over intensity. My personality is I can go to intensity pretty quick. All right? Some of you are laughing and know that probably about me, but I can get to intensity pretty quick. And so that's what God was speaking to me about in this area of gentleness, being able to be gentle and have the influence that he has called me to. Then he goes on to say, be patient, bearing with one another in love. Be patient. Wow, we need that today, right? We want faster Wi-Fi, quicker results, right? People who think like us and they do it right now. And we want the microwave kind of culture where everything is instant and quick and not patient. The word that Paul uses here for patient literally means long-tempered, long-tempered. And this is an area that I have to work on. My son, early, Noah, early in life, he sort of figured out that I was a fixer. If I heard something that needed some attention, maybe something didn't turn out the way he thought it should, and it was maybe somehow he was impacted by that, or our family was, I'm a fixer. I want to go take care of the problem, resolve it, and move forward. And I remember on one particular occasion, we were sitting at the dinner table. Noah was probably 13, 14 years old. And he said, Dad, I got to tell you something, but I do not need you to fix it. I just need to talk to you about it. And living with patience, being long-tempered, working through life's challenges. Patience. I'm going to give you space to grow because God gives me space to grow. That's a good thing for us to remember. Patience is us giving those around us some space to grow because God, in His generousness towards us, is giving us space to grow. I wanted to bring this photo of apples up. Some of you know, I grew up, my grandfather and my father both had apple orchards. My grandfather's farm was several hundred acres. These are the old-timey trees, right? The big trees that had really good fruit. Today's quick dwarf trees, you get a product off of it, but I don't think they have the same flavor, the same taste. But growing up on the farm, my father had four siblings, four counting him. There were four siblings in his family. And around my grandfather's farm, each one of the siblings lived at a corner with their family. So I lived at the corner of my grandfather's farm. And every summer, I have these great memories of from early in my childhood. Every summer when school was out, meeting all my cousins, around the farm someplace to play and to get together and have fun. And from a young child, we spent lots of time out on the farm. When I was around 10 years of age, my father bought a new apple farm he bought a new farm that he was going to turn into an apple farm about 10 miles away. And I remember when we moved there, just being open fields, rolling hills up in western Pennsylvania. And then a shipment came, and it was the trees. And, they're just sticks. They weren't very much. And I remember planting those, and I remember my dad telling us, yeah, it's going to take probably 8 to 10 years before we get in full production. And I couldn't believe that. And even today, I can't believe that. And that image of being patient, you know, the farmer, the apple, the produce farmer, being patient to plant and to just wait for that tree to develop to where it could move into full production. And I think that's a great thought for us to just think about. God's not finished with us. He's still working on us. We still have a few of that 10 years left where he's developing us into what he wants us to be. So we can go into full production, if you would, the way that he would have us to. Patient is not passive, it's powerful, right? Even in the illustration of a tree, boy, it went from being just a stick in the ground to producing this wonderful produce that we sold and earned our livelihood off of. And so as we think about patient, it's not being passive, just like not working through the issues of life or taking on the storms of life, but it's about being powerful and working through it. Patient is not a delay in progress, it's a display in maturity. Okay? And whenever I read that one hit home too. Being patient is not delaying progress. It shows my maturity. It shows my ability to be mature. And so thinking about living worthy of our calling today, being patient. As a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of your calling, of the calling you have received. You notice he didn't say up there, live worthy of a calling or whenever you are called. He's speaking to the church in Ephesus who had a lot to give up. They had a real, you study the life of the Ephesians church, it was a struggle for them. They really were impacted by culture, by idol worship, by magic, all kinds of things that happened there in Ephesus. And he's writing to them and he says, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. And in doing that, be humble. We talked about that. Be gentle. We talked about that. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. You notice it didn't say, go out and create unity. God gives unity, and sometimes we just have to keep it, right? It's not something for us to necessarily create, because God has already created unity. We create the disruption that goes and breaks it down and in our humanity. And so today, those were just some passages that, a passage that was on my mind that God had spoken to me about, and I hope that maybe you can take something away from it as well. But today, I hope that you will live worthy of your calling that you've been called to do. So, Ephesians chapter 4.